We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. The Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Have a question or comment? Call or text us at 304-314-4161 or email us at wvumsn@gmail.com. Now let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
So here it is, Virginia Tech Week at long last. We have waited since 2005 for this moment. Boy, what a great week it's going to be. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever you're listening, however you're listening. Thanks for joining us here on the official podcast for Mountaineer Athletics here on the WVU Sports platform. Glad to have you along. It's been a surreal week. I hope you're taking it in, and I'm making a concerted effort, I don't know about you, to just kind of drink everything in this week, because obviously it's all going to kind of culminate on Saturday afternoon against the Hokies, high noon at an officially sold-out Mountaineer Field. The only way that you could potentially get in is through our partner at StubHub. But of course, we'll be there to describe the sights, bring you the sounds of the West Virginia Mountaineers and the Virginia Tech Hokies in this Top 20 showdown. An important game for Neil Brown, biggest game in his now 3 years as West Virginia head coach. We're going to get into that coming up a little bit later on. John Lazor, play-by-play voice of the Hokies, is going to come by. He's going to give us a scouting report. Hokies, they're 2-0, but reeling big-time injury news. Tight end James Mitchell out for the year. We'll get into what all that means, and we'll talk about the Hokies defensively in particular, much improved from last year, and what was their season all about in 2020. Justin Fuente on the hot seat. Justin Hamilton, second year as the defensive coordinator, taking over for the legendary Bud Foster. So there's a lot to get into with John Lazor. Good buddy, go back a long way with John Lazor. Hall of Fame weekend, we're going to talk to two of them. It's Dale Wolfley talking to his big brother, Ronnie, part of the class of 2020. Ronnie Wolfley, the great West Virginia fullback, 10-year career in the NFL, radio analyst for the Arizona Cardinals, big-time morning host at a sports radio station out in Phoenix. He's coming by the program, and it's going to be Wolf on Wolf. You won't be able to tell the two apart, by the way. I was listening to this interview as Dale dropped it to me, And then I hear Ronnie, oh, brother. And then I hear Dale, oh, brother. I got lost. It's all one person. The Wolf Clan, of course, I know Craig as well from my time up in Pittsburgh, the eldest of the brothers, but fun Wolfly podcast. Years ago, we did a pod with all three of the Wolfly brothers, I believe for the first time ever. That's way back in the archives, probably 2016, maybe 2017, but I digress. Scouting report on the Hokies, Wolfly on Wolfly, and Jed Jerko, the big-time big leaguer from the University City. He's coming by the podcast as well. Also part of that 2020 class. As humble as can be, as content as can be, manager of the West Virginia Black Bears this past summer, really enjoying his first year off of baseball, largely by his own choosing, is essentially retired, though he hasn't officially come out and announced it, but father of now four, Gianna, now part of the mix this past June. So really enjoyed chatting with Jed. But as I mentioned just a moment ago, all right, looking to drink in this week because, you know, you pay attention to the news. So much is going on. COVID-19 continues to tap us on the shoulder just to, you know, let us know, give us a wave over there to say hello, still here. I'm certainly following all the recommendations of Dr. Clay Marsh, the West Virginia COVID-19 czar, suggests that you do too, though I'm not going to sit here and preach to you, but I am kind of, you know, as we come out of this, and hopefully we don't go back into anything, because there's all sorts of, you know, suggestions and legislation potentially being introduced in whatever level of government or whatever area you may be living in or dealing with. I'm trying to take in this week for what it is, because it's a really, really special week. There's so much going on. Ritsu Nahara's West Virginia volleyball team, at the time that we taped this podcast, on the heels of the Mountaineer Invitational. They've got two matches coming up on Thursday, 12:30 against George Washington, and then 5 o'clock against UMBC before a Friday night matchup against Penn State. That's going to be incredible. So for those that may be on their commute to the University City, we've got some Friday night activities for you at the WVU Coliseum Mountaineer Invitational. Check out Rudon Reed-Sunahara's Women's Volleyball Club. They're off to an unbeaten start so far, so kudos to them. And how about men's and women's soccer, what they're doing? My goodness. Up to number 4 in the nation, Dan Stratford's Mountaineers, 4-0-1. First time since 1996 that they are ranked 4th. And then on Friday night, they're going to be down in Huntington. They're going to be taking on the defending national champions, the Marshall Thundering Herd. That's a top 10 matchup. Marshall is ranked number 6th. WVU last Friday was able to knock off Ohio State. So they are flying high. They are doing historic things. And oh, by the way, ho-hum, Nikki Izzo-Brown's women's soccer team, Dick Lesk Soccer Stadium, on Sunday at 1 p.m. against Kent State. They have a big match coming up. They'll be in Harrisonburg, Virginia, on Thursday before they make their way back to the University City. So we've got so much going on in and around Morgantown, starting Thursday with volleyball, Friday going into men's soccer on the road, but then Penn State rivalry match is coming up in women's volleyball, and then, of course, the Hokies Hall of Fame week, Gold Rush sold out, and then it all kind of gets a bow put on it with women's soccer at Dick Lesk Soccer Stadium. So these are the type of weeks that I think we all just sort of live for, that we can just post up and enjoy college athletics, West Virginia athletics, for what it is. And we've waited a long time for these types of weeks. We've probably, at least I can raise my hand here, taken them for granted. And just, as I mentioned, is COVID kind of just taps you on the shoulder, lets you know that they're still there. They're kind of lurking around the corner. I'm in a position where I'm just trying to take a moment, be in the moment, and really enjoy West Virginia athletics this week. A really, really special week. And the fact that we are as close to normal to enjoy it all as we've been in a long, long time is a really cool thing. So let's get right to it. The podcast, as you may or may not know, if you're a first-timer here this year, we've got a new sponsor. I want to thank our good friends at GoPuff for jumping on board and helping support the podcast. You too can support the podcast. You too can support our fine friends at GoPuff. As they remind you, the college goes by fast, but GoPuff delivers faster. GoPuff is essentially will deliver anything that you want in 30 minutes or less. So that's the snacks, the drinks, any other game day essentials, burgers, buns, party cups. So if for whatever reason, and this is very much a possibility, that if something is sold out where you are at, if you just can't walk down to the hotel lobby or whatever and get what you need, well then, get on GoPuff. They could come in handy this weekend in this Gold Rush sellout showdown against the Virginia Tech Hokies. GoPuff was made for college students by college students, so they know what college students need. And for those that aren't college students, well, this is a weekend that most likely you're going to pretend to be one again. Good news. You can use the code VARSITY for $10 off your first couple of orders, V-A-R-S-I-T-Y, at checkout for $10 off your first two orders. GoPuff. Check him out. Now, let's check out John Lazor on the Mountaineer Insider Podcast, joining me earlier this week for a breakdown on the Hokies. All right, John, a pretty good start here for everything. Let's, before we get into some of the news surrounding the Hokies, take me back to the opener against North Carolina, what that meant, how big of a statement that was, frankly, considering what happened last year for Justin Fuente and the Hokies.
Yeah, absolutely. And great to be with you, Dan. As always, it was a huge night. I think both programs didn't shy away from that. They've really become rivals in the Coastal Division and also in recruiting because they're both trying to mine the same geographical area. And North Carolina's had all the momentum. Of course, they came into the season, rightfully so, I thought, hype just because the amount of talent they have on that roster. But there were so many things represented, you know, returning fans to Lane Stadium after last year. What happened to the Hokies last year is a great way to put it. What didn't happen to the Hokies? I was telling people I wasn't quite sure what we'd get from Justin Hamilton's defense, but willing to go out on a limb and say they would probably be one of the most statistically improved defenses in the country just because what they faced last year was impossible. And that's what we saw. Did I expect them to limit North Carolina to 10 points? Absolutely not. Did I expect them to pick off Sam Howell three times? Absolutely not. But the crowd was tremendous. The game plan was great to play keep away. And they executed just well enough to hold off North Carolina, who was starting to come on at the end of the game. But, you know, it was a huge game. Had we lost, you would have had to say the same thing. You would have been in a big hole. And fortunately, there's a ton of football to be played, obviously, but you sit on that ACC win now for the next 6 weeks.
How much did everybody not make of the transition from Bud Foster to Coach Hamilton and everything that went on?
I think that last year was just so unfair. And, right. And, you know, full disclosure, Justin's a pretty good friend of mine, and he was not one to be making excuses, but I was making them for him. You know, you look at the fact that you have a top 15 first-round pick in the cornerback spot, and that's like taking your three-hole hitter and a good one out of your baseball lineup where it throws everything off. So you lose Caleb Farley a couple weeks before the season. Then you lose Jermaine Waller, who was that 1A corner, and now all of a sudden you're starting guys that were two or three on your two deep, and that's okay. In the opener, they played well against NC State, but then the COVID infection hit, and you played Duke without your seven top DBs. You played North Carolina without 24 guys, including your entire safety room. And you also didn't have spring ball or really fall ball. You know, it was more calisthenics than it was system installation in the fall last year. It's just so absurd looking back on it. So I think eventually Justin Hamilton just relied on what Bud Foster did, because what he's doing now is not all that different. It's just a little less aggressive up front to try to take away some of those big plays and still able to pressure in a number of ways. Bud Foster is still here. He has an office in the building. Of course, Justin Hamilton and he are very close because Justin played for him and then coached with him on his staff as well. So, you know, the transition, people wanted to say, it's so interesting looking back because, like I say, their excuses, I guess, but people didn't want to hear them, but they were true. You know, we gave a lot more grace in basketball when a team would come back flat off of a COVID disruption, but we didn't in football, and I just never understood that. So they're going to give Justin Hamilton the grace because he is a Hokie, and I think a lot of people think he's a budding star, and so far so good this year.
There's a difference between an excuse and a reason. and an explanation, and I think you gave us explanations as to perhaps why something occurred. coming into this year and coming into this week in particular, let's not bury, I think, the biggest newsworthy item surrounding the Hokies, and that's some really unfortunate news coming down on Monday from Justin Fuente. Tight end James Mitchell, MRI season-ending knee surgery is on the docket, team captain, leadership council. That is not an insignificant loss, John.
No, it's not, in a variety of ways. You mentioned his leadership role on the team. He's just one of those kids who's a treasure. You know, his dad's a pastor, and he carries himself in that same kind of stoic way, and the guys really follow his lead. He's not a huge vocal rah-rah guy, but he's definitely an example, I think, to the locker room and the younger players of how to carry yourself as a student athlete, but also just as a young man representing Virginia Tech. So it's a big loss from that standpoint. From a personnel perspective, it's a big loss as well, because he is a matchup problem. You know, he's that prototypical hybrid tight end that we see in the NFL. Hokies hadn't used him a ton in the first couple of games, and some of that was because he was limited in camp with a shoulder issue, and now he has knee issue, unfortunately. So you hate to see it for him. It is a position of depth for Virginia Tech. I don't think it's going to be this devastating blow schematically that people seem to want to make it. We'll see starting on Saturday, but you have Nick Gallo, who's very capable, Drake Dulius as well. Maybe not quite as athletic as James, but similar profile and size. And I think he can continue to do some of the things, but it was disappointing. Like I say, it's just one of those things that tugs at your heartstrings, just because you know the caliber of person that James is. And now that timetable to return nearly a year when you have that knee surgery.
Who or what is the X factor for the Hokies on Saturday, John?
Well, I think it's going to be whether or not the offensive line can keep West Virginia's defensive line, which is very good. And you and I were talking about before we started talking, away from Braxton Burmeister. He's perfectly capable enough to extend plays and move the pocket and be mobile. And we've seen that the first couple of weeks. But at the same time, they've got to give him some clean pockets so he can take some shots down the field, because that's the X factor, is whether or not you can hit big plays and try to take the crowd out of it, particularly in the first half, because this will be obviously an exceptionally hostile environment. The first time this group has gone together on the road. And, you know, it's been almost 2 years since you've played in front of a hostile crowd. He kind of had a partial at Louisville, but nothing like you're going to have this Saturday. So how they handle that, the communication between the offensive line and Braxton, I think that that probably determines the level of success or lack thereof, particularly for this Tech offense.
What, if anything's holding Virginia Tech back this year, John?
Well, they're 2-0, and honestly, it was interesting in week two. You come off that massive high from North Carolina and all the hoopla that surrounds it in the primetime game. And I didn't think that there was a lack of focus or anything in the Middle Tennessee game. I think it was just a game that they knew they couldn't lose from a personnel standpoint. So they played very consistently, but not very aggressively. And I think that's capable there. But because now you're two games into the season and your game plan was keep it away and run the football against North Carolina, that worked brilliantly. But you look at the passing numbers for Virginia Tech, and they're just not where they could be in terms of this being an explosive offense to play complementary football. Defense has carried the water to this point, and the offense has done just enough. So they need to get that passing game going, and they're going to need to do it against an aggressive West Virginia defensive scheme on Saturday if they're going to try to get out of Morgantown with a win.
How big of a deal is this game for folks in Blacksburg? I mean, coming to Morgantown, obviously the neutral site game from 2017, but I mean, I still can't wrap my head around that the last trip here for the Hokies was 2005, better part of 20 years. We're talking almost a generation, right? You know, for kids in college right now, how old were they in 2005? Heck, for even 30-year-olds, it may be kind of in the rearview mirror. So take me through attitude, you know, just the buzz in Blacksburg right now in advance of this one on noon, Saturday.
It's interesting because I think it's generational when you look at the fan base. And I remember it in 2017, it was the first and to this point only time Virginia Tech has matched up with West Virginia. And you hear all the stories and all the hostility here and there, to be quite frank. I think sometimes we like to think it's one-sided in terms of creating a hostile environment. But for Hokies that are over the age of 30, they just plain old-fashioned hate West Virginia. And I would imagine that's the same for Mountaineer fans as it pertains to Hokies. But then you talk to the younger people associated with the program, the current students, they know they're supposed to hate West Virginia, but they haven't had those altercations, for lack of a better word, including myself. You know, we saw it a little bit in the parking lots at FedEx Field, but they opened them so late, you really couldn't commingle. Certainly, there was a lot of going back and forth on social media. So it's definitely a game that a big majority of this fan base had circled, particularly going to Morgantown. But at the same time, Justin Fuente was talking about it today or earlier this week, I should say. And he said, you know, I've kind of got to educate my team on it, and I don't know how much I want to do. I don't know how high I want them to be or how angry I want them to be, because like you said, a lot of them weren't even alive the last time this team went to Morgantown. So it's interesting. It absolutely matters, don't get me wrong, and it matters a lot. But I think for the younger section, they hate North Carolina and Virginia at this point more than they hate West Virginia. And for the older section, they hate West Virginia more than they hate North Carolina, especially in football, and probably will never get to that level.
All right. Well, Brian King sends his best, John. Just want to let you know. He says hello.
Greetings. I appreciate
Greetings to all of his friends down there in Blacksburg. Hey, look forward to it. Let's start something. All right. Somebody's got to get it rolling. I guess it's up to you and I. We'll see you on Saturday, my man.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it, man.
Special thanks to John Lazor. Now it's time to dive into a couple of conversations with a couple of Hall of Famers. Wolf on Wolf. Dale talking to Ronnie. Let me know. There's going to be a quiz at the end. Who was who? Can you tell them apart? I know I can't. And one's been my broadcast partner for the better part of a half a decade.
I am so proud of you in the right way before God. It's just an amazing thing, and I'm so happy for you, man. And, you know, we're both Mountaineers, and we wore the gold and blue, and you're in a great influence for me going there.
Yes, exactly right. This is what a lot of people don't know about this. This is great because you know, Soda Pop, why I didn't go to Syracuse. You know why. There it was. Jim Tressel was the wide receiver coach. Jim Tressel was recruiting me. And you know why I didn't go to Syracuse? Because I was afraid that I was going to suck. And Craig, our older brother, Craig, was a team captain, All-American at Syracuse University. I was like, I don't want to follow in his footsteps, because what if I stink? What if I'm bad? I was an 18-year-old kid. My brain was telling me, don't do that. Don't do that. And it tells you everything you need to know about Craig's career and my career. That's why you followed me to West Virginia University.
Well, I don't know about that, brother, but give me the quick transformation, because you were a tailback. He used to run straight up as a J-bird. And then you went changed and so that you could run 2 yards and fall on your face because you're so leaning forward, man. Tell us about that transition.
No, I got to tell you something, Bob. I mean, you nailed it right there. I thought that I was O.J. Simpson. All right. I know that's, you know, a name you don't throw out there very often anymore. I'm just saying, growing up in Buffalo, New York, the juice, of course, I thought I was O.J. Simpson. Pitch me the ball, Coach Nalen. Watch me get the edge. Watch me run around the corner right here. You know what? Day three, it took him 3 days before Coach Nalen came up to me and said, Wolf, we're moving you to fullback. Get down in a three-point stance, because we recruited a kid from Florida who's running a 4.3. And so you get down in a three-point stance and run in front of the kid. Soda, I weighed 198 pounds at that point in time. 198. And that was back in an era where you were running power. You were running ISO. Yeah. You were running blunt. You were running, oh my goodness, 198 pounds. I was blocking Daryl Talley, Dennis Foulkes. Okay, I was blocking guys that were just 250, 260, tough individuals at 198 pounds. And that transformation is still one of the most difficult things that I've ever had to do in my life.
Yeah, I bet. No, let's go to about your best favorite memory, because I'm thinking, was it the fake punt for TD against Boston College? Was it Oklahoma when you're out there and you beat them in 82? What was your best thing, man?
Oh, man, Soda Pop, you know I've talked about this a lot. I would have to say the Penn State victory my senior year, 1984, we beat them 17-14. It was the first time we beat Penn State in 32 years, Soda Pop. Stop and think about that. But it wasn't that game. That was a huge game. There's no doubt about it. But it was my sophomore season in 1982. going down and playing the Oklahoma Sooners. Oh my goodness, the legendary Oklahoma Sooners. Barry Switzer was their head coach. Marcus Dupree was their premier running back. You know how great he was. Steve Sewell, 6'3", 230 pounds of sleek speed, was another one of their backs. And I'll never forget, we went down there and we were playing in a packed house in Norman, Oklahoma, and nobody gave us a chance. Nobody thought they were ranked number 3, I think, at the time, or they were in the top 10, somewhere in there. Nobody gave us a chance of winning that game. We got down in that game, Soda, 14-0.
Yep.
Okay, 14-0, where I remember the very first play they ran, Steve Sewell, they kicked it out to Sewell on the option. He went 65 yards for a touchdown. We got down 14-0, and everyone thought, oh, my goodness, it's over. And we won that game 41-27 with Jeff Hostetler. Haas was out there. Think. You've never seen anything like Haas throwing the ball. And suddenly we ran it, we threw it, we pounded the Oklahoma Sooners and beat them 41-27 in their barn. And I have to tell you, seeing all those Cowboys sucking on the brim of their cap, that didn't stink.
You know, I thought it was going to be the Boston College fake punt TD, because I remember still from this day, and I think it was in 82 as well, but you took that back. Dude, you were on oxygen when he got to the sidelines. That was back when they had those big oxygen tanks, man. And you were like, you sounded like Batman, or the dude from Batman. I mean, yeah. I remember that.
Well, I had to do that, especially after talking to Don Nayland, because on that play, I called that punt. That fake punt was not on. I called that. I'm telling you right now, because it was a look. We worked in practice. And sure enough, there it was. They lined up with 7 guys to a side. And we had worked on it in practice, a fake punt. And I remember it was green, green, green. If it's there, take it. And I was the one who called it. They snapped it to me. We kicked out the edge. And I forget how long, what was it, Soda Pop? Was it? Because as the older I get, it was like 77.
But I think it was more like somewhere in the 60s, but you probably think it was the 70s, and it felt like forever for you to get in the end zone.
I had 3 teammates pass me on the way as I was running down the sidelines. I had 3 guys pass me. And Soda, this is a true story. I remember when I came off there, Don Nayland called me over and he said, boy, that was a good thing that play worked, because you'd be in real trouble right now. That was the truth. So I remember that. Yeah, that was one of my fondest memories. Doug Flutie in 4 years never beat us. Never beat us in 4 years. And every time I see him start a pop, I walk up to Flutie and I tell him, hey, Doug, you never beat us. He laughs.
Yeah,
to his credit.
There's got to be some kind of dig in there. It's got to bother him. I know him as well. So,
well, he won the Heisman. I mean,
he doesn't suck. You know, just those games he did.
It was, yes, right, exactly. It was just the fact Boston College sucked. He doesn't suck.
All right, well, listen, let's talk about what Joe Pa said about you to Coach Nayland, who just told me that story once again last week when I was doing the interview with him on TV. You know what he said? He said Joe Pa said that Ron Wolfley, up until that point in time, was the toughest fullback he's ever seen. And that's Joe Paterno for Penn State, man. You know, and I don't – hey, listen, we got a lot of great fullbacks came after, but for blocking, he didn't say running the ball. He said,
yeah, no, he wasn't talking about running the ball. So there's no doubt about that.
And so I would say this, that you were a human missile when you start at fullback. So don't worry about this 2-yard running from the guard, because you would get 6 yards to go hit that plug linebacker. It's called isolation.
Soda, I have to tell you this story quickly. And once again, I know you've got a time limit here and everything else, but I have to tell you this story because we already talked about the fact I thought I was O.J. Simpson, pitch me the ball, and I'd run the ball, and suddenly I was day 3 getting a 3-point stance, and you're going to run in front of the guy who's running a 4-3 from Florida. I For me, though, so my freshman year, after I got through that fall, and suddenly here comes the spring of my freshman year, right? And you know what happened in spring, Soda Pop. You know how physical spring was. You also know that our father was home in a hospital bed, dying in a hospital bed that spring that I went out as a freshman. And I will tell you, Soda, I was so disturbed by the fact that Dad was lying at home in bed. I went out there in the spring, still weighing 202 pounds, not 198, but 202 pounds. I went out in the spring of my freshman year, and I ran full speed at every guy that was on the field, whether it was a kick out on a power, whether it was an ISO, whether it was a toss with a strong safety force. I ran at him full speed and ran and didn't care what happened to myself. And I'll never forget getting killed by Daryl Talley, killed by guys on the field because I wasn't big enough. I would run full speed into them and there'd be this huge collision, but I was the one going down. And so I have to tell you, I had a coach that was the best, one of the best coaches, let's put it that way, I've ever had, but certainly at that point in my life, Paul Krasula. Mm-hmm. Paul Krasula was my coach, and he would run over to me and he'd pick me off the ground and he'd, you know, this tells you how much it's changed now. He'd run his hand across my chest zone and he would say, "You just got run down, right?" You know, after I'd run into him 100 miles an hour, full speed, people were looking around like, whoa, the collisions that were happening on, but I'd hit the ground. I'd fall down. That's Daryl Talley, for crying out loud. That's Dennis Folks. I mean, I would hit the ground after the collisions, but they were huge collisions. And I had Paul Krasula all over me. I'll never forget. That was how I learned, Soda Pop, how to play football. That is how I learned, with Dad dying in bed, because I wanted to make somebody else feel the pain I was feeling on the football field. And that was the only way I could express it, the only way that I could do it. And Soda, that is how I learned to play fullback. That's how I learned to play the position. And I'll never forget, I got to finish with this quickly. And I know it's a long story, you know me. I'm going to tell stories. But Paul Krasula, my senior year, he coached me all 4 years. My senior year, I was done. I went in to tell him, "Coach, I'm going home. I'm not going to be there for the last semester. And the reason being, I'm getting ready for the draft. I'm going to go and I'm going to train for the draft. I just wanted to say thank you so much." Paul Krasula stood up in his office. He shook my hand and he said, "Wolf, God bless you. Good luck to you." I turned around. I walked out. And as I was walking out, almost got to the door, he said, "Hey, Wolf." And I turned around. And it still chokes me up to this day. It does. He said, "Do you remember the spring of your freshman year?" I said, "Oh my goodness, coach, do I remember? You were brutal on me." And he said, "You're right. But I want you to know, I loved you. And that's why I did it." Now stop and think about that, Soda Pop. He saw something in me. And he coached me hard and he knew what I was going through. He knew what was happening and he thought he would coach me hard to get that out of me. And yet that's how I learned to play the fullback position. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, the story, but that's like so many of the coaches, the players' relationships. And honestly, bro, that is good stuff, man. But because you went way over the time limit in the story, okay, we're going to finish up.
Yeah, but wait a minute. You didn't know it was going to go over.
What's my favorite quote from you? I know you know this.
Let's see. Okay, if you need 2 yards, I'll get you two. If you need 4 yards, I'll get you two. Is that your favorite?
That's my favorite, man.
Listen, I nailed it.
I tell you what, man. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard from a football player with that quote. Period. We don't have time for the longer the story, because you already been yapping so much, but we got to roll here. I will say this, man. Hey, four-time Pro Bowler, 10-year NFL career. I got it right this time. 10 years in the NFL, 40 years at West Virginia. And you finally, finally figured out how to play the game of football. So, so proud of you. Happy, happy WVU Sports Hall of Fame induction. Even though you were inducted last year, 2020, they just needed a year to get by with the whole COVID. So I love you, brother, man. Hey, I'm going to go, and you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go bark at the moon, baby.
Boom!
Boom! You got it right, bro.
I love you, Soda Bob.
Love you, man.
That's a lot of wolfing right there. Ronnie Andale. Congratulations to Ronnie Wolfley, a Hall of Famer, long overdue. The Wolf from Orchard Park. You hear that iconic clip of the fullback smashing off the right side and going into the end zone. Ronnie Wolfley, a big part of that 84 West Virginia Mountaineer team. Part of the West Virginia heyday in the Big East was Jed Jerko. Who could forget his 2008 season? Who could forget how proud he's made us and his long and successful major league career? A guy that really, if he wanted to, could still roll out of bed and hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball without any practice whatsoever, could still get it done, retiring essentially at the top of his game. But the thing that I love about Jed most, obviously the humility is there, but he is a big-time family guy. Nothing is more important, and he, if anybody that I've been around that's worn the old golden blue in any sport, embodies what it's all about to be a Mountaineer, to be a West Virginian. It is the great Jed Jerko. Well, Jed, Hall of Famer. It's finally here. Obviously, class of 2020, and you had to wait a year, but I think everybody knew that watched you play that this was just a matter of time. And here it is. Finally, I guess the exclamation point to an incredible Mountaineer career, an incredible Mountaineer legacy. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's an honor. It's a small town kid from Morgantown growing up. You never thought you'd get to where I've been now. And it's just an honor. I appreciate the committee selecting me and Director Lyons for reaching out. It's just pretty cool to think about, just going back and thinking of all the kind of stuff that it took to get to where I am now. And just to see it all kind of pay off and to be able to do it right here in Morgantown obviously makes everything even more cool.
So take me back to the phone call. It was, a better part of a year ago that you got that call. How did that go? Where were you? I'm always curious to hear those stories when you do learn of what is just news that very few people were able to get.
Yeah, it was actually last off season. I was driving home from working out, getting ready for another season, and Mr. Lyons called me and said that I had been nominated and selected, and just wanted to congratulate me, and said we'll be in touch. And then the whole COVID thing kind of hit, kind of ruined things for last year. But it's cool to be able to get together this year, coming up this weekend, and to. To be able to go out to the football game and watch the game and just, take it all in.
Yeah, Virginia Tech as well, back here for the first time in 05. So if I'm doing my math, that would have been, your freshman or sophomore year, last time the Hokies were in town?
Yeah, I think I would have still been in high school back when that happened. So it's cool to kind of rekindle that rivalry, and hopefully we go out and play well.
So how much are you following things? I know you obviously are back in Morgantown. Had a little one. Number four came this past summer. Gianna, what's your status there with checking out the Mountaineers and following everything going on?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot easier to follow along now that I'm back in town all the time and not stressing about a game every single day throughout the summer. So being able to follow and watch it a lot closer than I have in the past. It's been fun. It's something that I remember doing when I was growing up. It was life or death back then when you were growing up, and that's all you ever thought about was, Mountaineer sports. So it's good to be back in town and just to be able to kind of relax and, watch things unfold.
Well, you were able to, I guess, get into the next chapter, if you will. You managed the Black Bears. What was that experience like this summer, and would you do it again if you had the opportunity?
was a lot of fun. There was definitely a different perspective on things. You know, being in control of the game as a manager and then not being in control of the game at all by not being out on the field. So it was a new dynamic that it was a lot of fun though. I had fun with it. I think we did, you know, my coaches and I think we did a lot of good things for the kids that were there. We had a lot of kids move on to professional baseball, which is
Oh, that's Gianna. Hi, Gianna.
There she is.
Which is
ultimately the goal was to get these kids into professional baseball, and so it was fun. If the opportunity presents itself again next year, I think I would definitely something that I would be interested in doing.
All right. Well, I love it, and Gianna has some thoughts. Maybe she wants Daddy home. I don't know over the summer, but you are home, I guess. And it doesn't seem like you're going to be leaving anytime soon. And as I look at you here on this Zoom call that we have, you look as happy as you've ever been, as content as you've ever been. Do I have that right?
Yes, it's good to just kind of settle down and to get to spend time with my family, which is something that I've never really gotten to do for an extended period of time. Definitely with the kids, the other three are starting to get into school, and to be able to let them kind of settle down and not travel as much is something that that is fun, to get to coach them in flag football and to help them with baseball and be their coach and doing stuff like that. Just stuff that I've never gotten to experience with them. And, just to be able to spend time with them makes it all worth it.
Yeah, you seem like you're eating it up. So what are your day in and day out responsibilities now that, that there's no ballpark to be at? There's no off-season training regimen that is strict and intense to adhere to? But I'm sure that honey-do list has compounded over the years with interest. So what is a day in the life of Jed Jerko like now, since it's your turn, if you will?
Yeah, I always say that I work more now than I did when I actually had a job. So it's, changed with diapers. I still try to get a workout in from time to time when I can. And, in the evenings when school's over, it's usually off to some kind of practice, whether it's, baseball or football or something, just spending time with the family, like I said. Just kind of taking it all in, getting to do things that I've never done, getting to golf in the summer, getting to, get ready for hunting season and stuff that I've never gotten to do, which is fun. Doing a lot of work out at my farm, which is something that I enjoy, and hopefully can share that with my kids.
So do you have a future in the game of baseball? And if you do, what form or fashion would it be in?
I'm not sure. I hope there's a future somewhere. Obviously, I'd love to stay local would be the main thing. But, time will tell. Like you said, I'm content with where I'm at right now. If things change down the road when the kids get a little older, it's definitely something that I hope I can get back into at some point. But until maybe right now, I might just be the Black Bears and enjoying the summers with them and doing what I can to help the local community.
So the Hall of Fame weekend edition of this Mountaineer Insider podcast, the Hokie edition of the Mountaineer Insider podcast. Hope you enjoyed it and hope you'll enjoy what's a really special week surrounding West Virginia University athletics, not just on the gridiron Saturday, but in and around the festivities with so many of our athletic programs off to terrific starts, women's volleyball, men's and women's soccer. Good luck to all y'all here as we try to just put that cherry on the top with a signature victory for Neil Brown. High Noon, Gold Rush, Mountaineer Field. Many of you are going to be there. If you can't get in, well, we'll be sure to describe the sights, bring you those sounds of the Mountaineers in combat and the Hokies in Morgantown for the first time since 2005. For all of us, Jed Jerko, Ronnie Wolfley, my broadcast partner Dale Wolfley, and John Laser, this is Dan Zangrilli. Thanks for joining us on the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. It's all delivered by GoPuff here on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network. Like the podcast? Give us 5 stars or leave a review. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at WVUMSN or find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUSports.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.